Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawubona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings. And may peace be upon you all.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self, cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you guys are having a rockin' Tuesday. I'm Jody Susan with Susan Essentials, and welcome to Self-Cell Care. Today, we're bringing on the experts about finding your voice. And I am really excited to share that I have two amazing guests. And first is Rabbi Nancy Landsman. And we met several years ago. And she has a unique way, I think, that supports people in finding their voice at a different time of life. And so we're going to talk about that. And we have Kristen Crockett of Courageous Destiny. She will be talking about finding your voice also in a different part. So we're going to be looking at different spectrums in the universe, right? And where it shows up for you. And that's the beauty of life. Like, everybody has different perspectives and different ways of helping. And there's no right or wrong. It's just where we're at and how we support people and being who they are. So I really love that. With that being said, I'm going to bring on Rabbi Nancy and Kristen. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great. Thanks for having us. Fantastic. I'm excited to be here this morning.
Me too. So it's unfortunate that two of our guests had so one of our guests got really sick, and the other one is moving her home. It just sold. I'm like, no worries. God's got this, right? And so I always feel like we're exactly where we need to be. Like, there are no mistakes in the world, right? Like, there's just, you know, oops, my computer is having a mind of its own. Some screens just started popping up. That's a beautiful thing. So anyway, let's start, if you don't mind. And I'm going to be navigating a couple different things here where, by the way, for the listeners, whoever wants to call in and ask questions, if you're not watching us on YouTube and you're not watching us on Facebook, which is the Susan Essentials YouTube channel, okay, or the Susan Essentials Facebook channel, you can call in. And the number here is, let's go back to that because I've never memorized it. 1 second. So the number is 515-605-9325. And if you want to call in and listen, perfect. You want to speak to someone, press 1, and you can speak to Rabbi Nancy. You can talk to Kristen or myself and ask questions. All right. So let's talk, ladies. Let's talk turkey, shall we? So who wants to start first? I'm putting you guys both on the spot. Okay. Rabbi Nancy.
Sure.
Okay, so you are an amazing soul, and you shared with me about how you help people find their voice. And I think that what you said was at the end of life. Is that right?
Correct.
Can you share with me what that looks like and share with the audience the uniqueness about that?
Sure. Thank you. So much of the work I do is with people who know that the end of their time here on Earth is coming to an end. And there's a lot of fear and anxiety that people have at that time in their life. And I'm often a stranger, somebody they're meeting for the very first time. And so through my training, I do the best that I can to create this safe space for people to feel comfortable, to open their hearts, to share what it is that they're anxious about or the fears that they have. I mean, we all know intellectually that we will die eventually, but we're nervous about it. We're scared about it. We don't want to go. We don't want to leave our loved ones. And many times I find that people have what we call unfinished business. Or they have regrets and they have concerns about how will my loved ones be when I'm no longer physically here.
Really good point. People share with me
what it is that it's intimate details that they want shared and want their loved ones to know so that I can be like a messenger to their family members and their friends and their loved ones that they want to know, you know, these certain details. And so it's a blessing to be with these people at this time, to know that they can trust me with whatever they're going to say, certain things. It's just going to be between me and the individual. But everyone wants to be heard. And especially at that time of life when they know they don't have too many more chances to be heard, to be listened to in such a compassionate way.
Amazing, amazing. And then, you know, Kristen, you help people be heard at a different time of life, right? So talk about that a little bit.
Well, I help people, I coach people to live courageously, you know, so one of the things that I think is the most courageous thing that somebody can do is to truly speak their truth, you know, and to be authentic and to make sure they're heard. So it's like, to me, it's courageous. So if you create a habit of courage, one of the things you can create a habit of courage in is what you say and how you portray yourself in the world. And how you stand up for yourself and how you speak. So that is definitely one of the things that I coach mostly women to do. So.
And how did you come to, it's a unique, you know, first of all, you've been doing this a while, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How did you get into that? Because.
Sure. So I actually started out, so I've been in sales for over 20 years. So I was in corporate sales. And 8 years ago, I met my first coach. So he actually coached me through a process, what's called raising deserve level. So that's based on the concept you get in life, what your unconscious mind believes you deserve. And I remember even in our first phone calls going, are you saying some super secret part of my brain is stopping me from taking action on my life? And what I had found over the first 3 months of coaching was indeed it was all of the decisions that I had made about who I was and the way the world works, you know, made me a people pleaser, you know, in a lot of ways made me somebody that was really quiet in the world, and I was living for other people, not for myself. And as I went through the process to raise my deserve level more and more, which is really my self-worth, right? If you kind of look at your level of worthiness, the more I started to raise the bar on that, the more I started to speak up, the more I started to create things instead of diminish myself, instead of being quiet, you know, when things would get rough or I thought there would be conflict. So more and more I started to really release, I guess, myself into the world. And over the following 8 years since doing that, it became courageous destiny. I'm like, I want to help people do this, because when you're really able to create and design your life the way you want it to be, you also give other people permission to do the same thing. And other people, you know, step out in the world that way. And so, you know, it's really where my heart is and what I love to do. So
that's, you know, so that's very near and dear to my heart. There's a few people that I coach as well. You know, so, you know, Kristen coaches on leadership and finding your voice. I really coach on self-care, especially related to nutrition and, you know, other positive habits, you know, health habits. But I've studied leadership for 30 years, and I think that what you say, Kristen, is very true. So I'm going to expand upon this because I took some notes. People, when we are people pleasers, right, we're living for the approval of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we're living for the approval of someone else, we are not being our authentic selves, in my opinion. You know?
Correct. Okay. I agree.
And so to live authentically, it allows us to attract our tribe. And so, for those people who hesitate or pause on living their authentic life and speaking their truth, know that across that rainbow, right, when you step into your own, you actually, the gift that God gives you back is your tribe. right?
Mm-hmm.
So, because...
We always attract who we are.
Right.
You know, so the more authentic we are and the less we're trying to please other people. And it's everywhere. Like, it was everywhere with me. And I still find it. You know, I'm like, oh, you're doing it again, girl. You know, and it's to me, it's fun. You know, I haven't made it wrong or I haven't made it something wrong about me. I've made it, you know, it's something courageous to look at and to expand my awareness around so that the more I see it, the more I can make adjustments. You know, I'm not, you know, that's another thing I love to share with people. You're not broken. You're not broken. You don't need fixing. You just make these little adjustments, a little WD-40 sometimes.
Or coconut essential oil, okay? I'm just
going to... Essential oil, right. That would definitely smell better than WD-40, right?
So, oh, please. The man out there, you can have your WD-40, okay?
Right. So, you know, but I mean, it's making the adjustments, you know, knowing you're doing it, you know, so I'm a very big fan of expanding my own awareness. So I'm always observing myself and what I'm doing. And I coach people to do this because if you can't tell what you're doing, you can't change anything, you know. So it's all about expanding awareness and being able to identify where you are people pleasing so that you can make the adjustments. Where am I living for somebody else, you know? And these are things that I do in journaling and meditation and that sort of thing. But there's all kinds of different ways to expand your awareness. And sometimes it's just being straight with yourself. You know, I like to look out for what I call my mute button. You know, where am I muting myself? You know, I'm like, oh, I wanted to say that, but I didn't say that. Why didn't I say that? That's fascinating. You know, I coach people to say their mind, you know, so... Of course, with a little bit of wisdom, but
you know what? I saw a psychologist for many years. It's on my website. Her name is Dr. Michelle Kukla, and I had gotten a remote control out. She told me to get an old remote control and put it on the button, not the mute.
Yes. That's a good one. Yeah, pause. Take as much time as you need to communicate. I'd love to share that too with people. Like, take your time. You're not in a hurry. You know, if they leave because you have to take your time sharing with them, then they're not your people. So.
Exactly. Rabbi Nancy, how does that show up for you?
It's so interesting listening to the two of you share. You know, I find that there's the balance that we need in life to please people, right? And to please ourselves, right? Like, in listening to the two of you, it occurs to I'm a people pleaser as well. And maybe that's why I went into social work. I wanted to help people. And yet when I learned in the chaplaincy work that I do, when you take clinical pastoral education, it's not like social work. It's almost the opposite. You're not there as a chaplain to fix, like social workers. We're there to fix things, to help people. I mean, we help people in a different way in the chaplaincy work. It's more about, in the chaplaincy work, listening, just being very present. So I think about all the things that I'm so passionate about, yoga, which is mindfulness and being in the moment, right? Waking up every day from a place of gratitude for the sun, for just body functions, working, you know, for every little thing that maybe isn't so little, right? Things that we often take for granted. So, you know, when we show up in the world, it's like, well, we know that we need to take care of ourselves and have self worth, right? And that enables us to be able to do the work I think that we do and be able to, whether it's pleasing people, helping people. I mean, I think there's something with the semantics there, right? And it all boils down to every human being is worthy of being heard, being validated, being acknowledged, being loved. We all share the same needs in that respect, I think. And when we know that there are people in our life that we can turn to help us to feel loved, heard, validated, understood, really people are paying attention and listening. And some people that come into our life need more attention than others and need more care than others, but so much of what I do is just sit and listen. And I pick up on the nonverbal cues as well. Even during this pandemic, it's been a little more challenging on Zoom or other similar platforms. But we do the best that we can to be there for another human being. And I think everyone needs somebody in their corner, so to speak, right?
Totally agree. And I think there's a, you make a good point. You talk about pleasing versus helping. And I think there's a distinction to be made, right? So pleasing is doing things that are not authentic to you, right? You're just doing it to keep everybody else happy. I call that pain avoidance, right? People are trying to mitigate their pain points. If I can keep that person happy, boom, 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 this is good. I'll do this. I know this makes them happy. Distinct from being a stand for them, listening to them, helping them, that's empowering. And Kristen, I'm sure you have something to add to that.
Well, yeah, I think the context of that is really important. You know, so like when I'm helping people, for example, and I love that you mentioned listening and presence, because that's so critical. You know, you can't, you know, one of my main things that I coach people on, particularly whether it's in sales or whatever profession they're in, it's listening is so critical, because if you don't understand the full context of where the person is coming from, at least as much as you can, then, you know, there's nothing really to, and that's what I think of an issue with a lot of relationships is, right? You know, people don't listen to their partner, or they don't really fully understand where that other person is coming from. And so they're jumping to a conclusion and cutting that person off before they've really been able to understand the full context. And I think that, you know, I've never said this before, so this is really great to get to create this on the show, but listening with integrity is so critical, you know, at least in my mind, I've never said that like that to myself, but I'm like listening with integrity, because it's, and what is your intention?
Well, that's what I always say, listen with intention. And
yeah.
I love listen with integrity too. I mean, think about that, you know, that's, and I'm, this is my past, but I've always, wherever I was always number one in sales, like number one. And I remember I was working at a bank and we were in our morning huddle and they said to me, well, tell me how you became number one in the market. And we're talking Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois. I had no idea. I said, one, I had no idea I was number one because I'm not looking, right? I'm not focusing on what other people are doing. I was only focusing on my customer.
That's right.
That's all you need to do. Focus on whoever your customer is, meet their needs, and life will unfold.
Well, and when, you know, the other thing with, you know, just to kind of bring it, like a lot of people hear the word sales and they get the heebie-jeebies, you know, but like one of the things that I always say too is we're all in sales to some degree because we're always sharing our point of view with people. And we're always enrolling people in what our perspective is, you know. So, you know, I've always loved sales, and I almost look at sales like an area of life, you know, because to me it's like, can I share my full perspective with people? Can I navigate with them? Can I negotiate with them? That kind of thing, like. You know, I'm always negotiating. Like, I'm always in sales. I've got triplet 13-year-olds in the other room. Like, even when I'm at
sales, I'm telling you now.
Like, when I get to sales, I'm like, oh, this is easy. because it's simpler, right? But, I mean, we're always sharing our full, you know, in sales, like, one of the main things I always tell people is believe in the product or service that you're selling 100%. If you do that, you don't have anything to hide. There's nothing to feel bad about. You're actually stingy if you're not sharing that with people.
Thank you.
So I agree. It's all about the customer, and it's another one of the secrets that I share with people. I do a keynote speech, 7 Secrets to Limitless Sales. And one of my secrets is that make sure it's not about you, you know, and what you're doing. Make sure it's about that other person. As long as you're focused in on that other person and the value that they're going to get, and you believe in that product or service 100%, there's nothing that you shouldn't be able to share about it.
So guys, you know? I want to say about this now on the other side, right? So I'm, let's say you guys are the ones sharing your truth. Right. And now I'm the one receiving your truth. Right. Doesn't really resonate with me, let's say, which it does. But let's just say it doesn't for the sake of this conversation. How do I find my voice as the recipient of your truth, but it doesn't resonate with me? What are ways that people can share their truth when it's not in alignment with the person who's talking to them?
I think that if you share your truth, then if I'm an integrity as a salesperson, if I've shared my truth with that person, if it doesn't align with them, that's okay. You know, I don't have to be attached to whether it aligns with them or not. You know, I can leave with gratitude. I always say leave with gratitude. You know, thank you for listening to me. I really appreciate you, you know, and it makes me feel good about it. And I feel good because I've shared, because if I believe in that product or service 100% and I see the value for that person, I don't share with them, and then I'm being stingy. So as long as I share with them, I'm not being stingy anymore.
Rabbi?
And they can take it or leave it.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Uh-oh.
I am a talker.
So, Rabbi.
Sure. So, you know, not every shoe fits, right? So when oftentimes wedding couples will contact me, oh, are you available to officiate our wedding on such and such date? And they're interviewing me as much as I'm interviewing them, right? Like, we don't always align. I always start with, what is the vision you have for your wedding day? What would you like your ceremony to look like? I do a lot of interfaith work as well. And I think it's beautiful to blend both traditions. But they're hiring many times just me, or sometimes I co-officiate, right? So depending upon what the situation is, again, it's listening. What is your vision? What are you looking for? And then I'm all about trying to find the way to say yes, but I have to be true to myself. So if it's something that isn't comfortable on my end, right, it goes both ways for the couple and for me. So we talk about it and we see if it's so I think about it in terms of that. That's what came up in listening to the two of you is about wedding couples.
Well, and that's a really good point. When I am working with, let's say if I have somebody who's not a client, but they're a prospect, right? And they're, you know, looking for a solution for health. And I love it that people take control of their health and that they want to, they come to me with what they think is the solution. I had someone who came to me the other week, about 4 weeks ago, actually, and they wanted to do a particular modality to reclaim their health. And it wasn't the right modality. They had been doing like little snippets of things that might get them to where they go, and it wasn't working for them. And it hadn't worked for them for, I mean, I think almost 10 years. And I said, if you come to me, it's a blood test at this point. We're not doing like little Band-Aids, right? And so I actually, on that side, you know, they were presenting to me, I had to be authentic to myself, use my voice, because I know better, right? In this instance, I know better because I'm highly trained on how to help the body heal itself, right? AKA reverse disease. So anyway, but really it's the body healing itself. I'm not the one reversing the disease. They have to take the action, but they have to take the proper action. So we have to, I think, be willing to to say no with compassion, love, and grace, right? And I think when people are trying to find their voice, the importance is, when can you, you know, how do you say no with compassion, love, and grace, right? Because if you can say no with compassion and not have anger behind it, resentment behind it, and I'm sure there's another modifier, right? Give me another modifier, ladies. But
fear.
Yeah, fear. So when people say no, they fear. Thank you, Rabbi, right? So they fear that they're going to lose a friendship. But consider the fact you may get something else. You may get a deeper connection with that person because you were willing to speak your truth.
That's very true. That's very true. And I always say too, like, it's practice saying no. You know, people don't want to say no. Well, you got to practice. You know, just like with anything, it takes practice. I had a coach one time tell me, she's like, I want you to say no to everybody you possibly can this week. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, I just want you to say no. She's like, you need to practice. And I'm like, but? And she's like, the world's not going to stop. And that's the people pleaser in me. I'm like, you want me to say no to everybody? At least once? Yeah. But it does. It was after that that I'm like, I would say no to people. And then I'd be like, are they still there? Do they? You know, like, it was scary, you know. But nobody, you know, I truly do believe that as long as you're operating from a place of love, in my opinion, that, you know, no is a fine thing to say.
Well,
it's
and
a
it's,
fine thing to say.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I just looked up people pleasers, right? The definition, just for giggles.
Yeah.
Because it's someone who tries hard to make others happy. They will often go out of their way to please someone, even if it means taking their own valuable time or resources away from them. And people pleasers often act the way they do because of their insecurities and lack of self-esteem. So, you know, I think that's interesting because I think that once I reclaimed my self-confidence, which mine was in the toilet, right, back in, shoot, guys. For those who don't know my story, I'll give the under the 1 minute version. So I fell at work and tore my rotator cuff. This is in 1997. Because it was under, you know, work, it was workman's comp, and they sent me to their physical therapist, who said, the pain's all in your head. You need to go see a doctor. And no one ever did an MRI, right? And the doctor misdiagnosed me having bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. And what I learned was, and I did this 360-degree profiler, and this is not in my book, but I did this 360-degree profiler. And what that is you send out this assessment to, like, your five closest friends at work, and they give you an evaluation. And you're expecting it to be pretty good, right? Because you like those people. Well, they all came back with the same comments, right? And they weren't very nice. So I went into people-pleasing mode, okay? Because I didn't want to hurt other people. Oh, wow. Yeah, so I didn't want to hurt other people. So I took drugs, you know, prescription drugs, to avoid hurting other people. And it just occurred to me. Wow. So we have a world right now, and I don't want to use the word because we'll get censored, but the C-19 thing, right? And a lot of people are masking up because they don't want to hurt other people, even though it clearly hurts their health. And a lot of people are willing to take an experimental drug, you know, there's no guarantee it will stop the outcome, which is the C-19, and there's no guarantee that
it won't hurt you because they don't have any testing, you know, done to see what the outcome would be for you in 10 years or 5 years. There's no way that they could have that kind of, they don't have that information because it hasn't happened yet. And so I think, you know, when I look at how I was a people pleaser, I was willing to take up to, I was 19 different medications all at the same time. I was willing to destroy my own body so that I wouldn't hurt other people. And I'm wondering out there, who are you out there that needed to hear that message? That you're considering doing something like taking a drug or taking an injection because you're fearing hurting somebody else. I feel like this is a message that needs to be sent right now. And know that the reason I don't mask up is because I spent 2 decades reclaiming my health. Over 2 decades reclaiming my health. So I'm not going backwards. I'm not going to please somebody else and destroy my own health when people can step up and support their immune system. Sorry, I just felt like someone needed to hear that. That's what came up.
And I think, I mean, it's just my opinion, but I think that everybody has a free will, and everybody's had different experiences and received different information as well. You know, so they're drawing their own conclusions. And I always remember that people have free will. Like, even as a coach, you know, people hire me and I still can't control people's things no matter how hard I try. You know? And so I take the information that I believe is from the best source, and I make conclusions and determinations for myself, you know, and my children, you know, based on those conclusions. So in other words, I do the best I can with the knowledge that I have.
So,
and I think that's part of it.
I think that's so key. So here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now it goes right back into finding your voice, which is,
mm-hmm.
Can you be masked up? Can you be, you know, with the injection and not be angry at somebody who chooses the opposite? Can you still have your own voice and do you and let other people do them?
Absolutely. And I mean, this program, I didn't know we were going to go there, but voice, we don't all agree.
Right.
As the rabbi of Congregation Ahavat Olam, I preach to them as we do as rabbis, and I counsel people, and I always say, even to my adult children who I think are maybe listening in right now, we cannot control what other people do. We can only control ourselves. We hear the news. We read the news. We get the information that comes to us, right? And each of us as individuals decide for ourselves what we think is best for us. We cannot control what other people do. And therefore, if you are with other people who don't share your view, you can't control them. You can still have respect for another human being and be kind to another human being, whether it's your relative or a stranger, right? I'm often around people who don't share my view, and I'm feeling like I'm in an uncomfortable situation. And I, you know, that's where fear comes up, right? I don't want to die from a disease. I don't want to get sick or get other people sick. Do we know for sure, as you, to your point, Jody, I mean, this is all new, right? So much is, we don't have a lot of data, but the data that we do have causes people to make a decision for themselves, for their children. There's children who are not adult children, right? We can't tell our adult children what to do. So I think it's important that in life in general, that we come from a place of love, like you were saying, Kristen, right? That we respect each other. And that comes to when we talk about politics too. So with anything where people don't share our view, can we still live in a world peacefully, right? Can we still come to, I mean, I think about all the interfaith work that I do and how I choose to focus on how we're more alike than not and how we can still respect each other and love each other even though we don't share the same view without harming. Sometimes we make decisions for ourselves and they don't affect other people. But in the area where you were taking this conversation, which I had no idea we would be going there in this show, I think that becomes problematic when we don't share the same view and we believe that other people are maybe harming us or our choice is harming someone else. And it's one thing when you make a decision and it doesn't affect anyone else. But when you make a decision for your life and your behavior and you show up in the world where you are perhaps putting other people in danger from your behavior, that to me is problematic. And we, I think, need to be more understanding of our behavior, whether it's our verbal behavior or our nonverbal behavior. I don't think that people think about it often that way. They just think, this is what I want to do, and it doesn't matter what you think. Well, maybe, you know, maybe there's a reason why certain standards are put in place before one can do certain work. I can't go back into the hospital to volunteer as a chaplain, as a volunteer, unless I'm vaccinated. Now, we know that there are medical professionals who work in the hospital and they're not all vaccinated, right? So it's kind of interesting. It's a whole different conversation, but I think we have to, we come back to a place of integrity and love and kindness and helping people, respecting people to be heard and listened to and respected for their, and if your belief doesn't affect another person's belief, doesn't cause harm, then I think that that's fine. But when it does, then that's a different situation.
Well, I agree. And I think that there's so much fear in the world right now that instead of honoring people's differences, which I'm all for, like I have my own opinion how I will treat my body. But you can treat your body, Kristen, the way you want to, right? And Rabbi Nancy, you can treat your body the way you want to. I'm okay with that because I'm so confident in the way that I treated my body. I'm not going to worry about somebody else's body. It's not mine to worry about. Not my child. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say one of the things that I heard Rabbi Nancy say that I like so much is the kindness piece. You know, and you can always be kind. You know, it's one of the things that I teach my triplets, you know, because they're, you know, a lot of what they've been through is this just natural fear. And they wear the mask because they're afraid, because they've never, you know, they don't have all of the background and, you know, and they're just legitimately afraid. So when other people aren't wearing them, you know, they're like, why aren't they wearing them? I don't understand, you know? And so it's a constant conversation that we're having, but I'm always saying, you know, like one of the first reactions is they're stupid, they're not wearing them. Like, no. Right? And like kindness matters, you know, being tolerant of other people and our differences matter, because we're all going to have different, you know, we're all going to have different opinions about this. And so that's the one thing that I keep instilling into them is that kindness piece. Just be kind and, you know, like you said, respectful of people, but create kindness on purpose.
On purpose, yeah. And right now we're going to go to commercial break because we were supposed to do that 14 minutes ago. Let's see. Let's see. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our host. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution.
Okay, and got another one for you.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan, Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses, and we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being, and we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
All right. Enough of that. That's a big answer. Hold on. Wasn't even scheduled that one.
Jody, that food looked good. I was like, now I'm hungry.
And you know what? We did a lot of cooking. It was really, really cool. We hired someone to do all these videos, and I had to do major batch cooking to get all that prepared. We had friends help us, and you know, and then we ate. When the video was done, we ate. And here's the thing. So let me just touch on food for a moment, because food is amazing. And, you know, people think that people who teach about health don't get sick. Spoiler. So untrue. It's just that when we get sick, we know exactly where to go, right? What to take for whatever that concern is. And, you know, whether it's cinnamon or turmeric or black pepper or N-acetyl, which is an amino acid. Like, when you know what to use, right, or to get you grounded, chocolate. Right, everybody, chocolate. But it's not just any chocolate. It's knowing how to source that food. Because once you know how to source your what food to eat for what, and then how to source the food, meaning it doesn't have chemicals, it's not laden with sugar. If it does have sugar, it's not cane sugar, which lights up, you know, eight pleasure centers in the brain, which doesn't allow you to be present and listen, okay? So it's amazing. So So anyways, I just, yeah, I love food. And food is my friend, and I love to eat. And I'm not fat, so what would it look like if you could eat all the time and not be fat, right? Anyway, shall we go back to finding your voice?
I thought what you were saying about finding your voice, I heard the word intention. And in Judaism, we talk about when we pray, we should pray from a place of intention. We call it kavanah, right? So it's from the heart, right? A lot of people can just say the prayers and they say, and they can, in Hebrew, right? And can recite them super quickly. But do they understand, or are they saying the words, even if they do understand them, are they saying them or chanting them, reciting them with intention, right? Are you just looking out the window, Baruch Atah Adonai, hit you, right? Or are you praying from a place of intention? Are you really focusing on the words? So that all comes back to the mindfulness and integrity, right? And being present as you are in that moment, whether it's praying or whether you're speaking to another human being. There's so many similarities, right? And it's all from the foundation of kindness, love, intention, respect, which shows up in all areas, I think, of our life. And so I think we all need that solid foundation, whether we're talking about food and choices we make for our body or for our health, right? All of this comes back to, you know, you want to have some knowledge, right? That's important, right? And the integrity.
Well, yeah, let's talk about food for one more moment, or not even the food, but the chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
I was coaching someone probably 2 years ago, year and a half ago, and she's a brilliant woman. Really, she is. And her husband didn't want to remove the chemicals from the home. And she was challenged with finding her voice. Like, how is she going to keep her husband happy, remove the chemicals from the home that were causing her to have symptoms of Parkinson's disease. And even though she was at her pain point, meaning her health was at stake, she still couldn't find her voice. So the Roundup was still in the garage, right? And chemicals, like everything in the world is energy. Like everything is energy. Our bodies are electrical energy. Our words that we use are energy. There are vibrations in the air. And that energy is either going to heal or hurt. And as soon as Kristen comes back, I want to know, because I think this is for her to answer, is where do you find the courage? Hi, Don.
I was thirsty.
That is all good. So you can see my lineup. I've got my water. I've got my not your mama's coffee. It's also not your mama's hot cocoa and all this. It's mushroom infused. And then, of course, where did my kombucha go? Oh, and then I have my kombucha. So I guess a thirsty thing. There you go. So, but both of you, I would love for you each to talk about having the courage and losing the fear, especially, you know, this person's life is at stake. And I know that's how a lot of people feel today, just in general, that their life is at stake. How do we find our voice to share what we need and operate with integrity? Right? And with intention, because those are, I love these I words, intention and integrity. It's insightful. But seriously, like, how do you do that? How do you care but not care? Because I think that in some ways, and I'll let you guys type in a second, in some ways, you almost have to stop for the moment caring what other people think
Just be okay with where you're at. And it doesn't mean that you don't have compassion for what they think, but don't care enough that you would do it their way. Do you. I tell people all the time, just do you. Go ahead. Who wants to go first? Rabbi or Kristen?
Kristen.
Okay. I'm good. I mean, I think that I can be a powerful stand for people. Like, I can be very powerful, and I really come from a place, my intention is to inspire people to take action. So it's not to force them to take action. It's not to, it's my way or the highway, babe. You know, it's, I'm here to inspire people to take action. And to me, be able to do that, you know, you need to be able to share from your authentic self, like, share authentically what the truth is. You know, like, I share with people all the time about deserve level, for example. I believe it's the missing link for people. I'm like, if you don't believe you deserve something and it's unconscious, you're going to be self-sabotaging yourself. You know, so love, you know, I'm very passionate. I'm like, if you don't believe...
Yeah, I was sharing our video, and so it went live on top of us.
I was like, was that me? And I didn't know it.
Just this stuff.
Well, I'm really passionate. So I've really practiced releasing whatever their response is. I'm in integrity if I've shared, you know, and if I'm in integrity if I've shared. If I didn't share, then I'll never know. But as long as I share, and, you know, I come from my intention is always to help people, you know, and to be in the service of people. And, you know, that's where I come from. And if they listen, they listen. And if they don't, they don't. A lot of people don't listen. A lot of people aren't open to things outside their world all the time, you know. And I just make that right, and I expect that. And, you know. But I do powerfully stand for it, and I will inspire people, and nobody's going to shut me up about it. You know what I mean?
Well, and here's the thing. So, yeah, I mean, we are sometimes just gardeners. Are we not?
Mm-hmm.
We're just planting some seeds.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. So.
And I'm in integrity if I planted the seed. You know, I'm in integrity if I did that.
Yes.
You know.
And so.
So
can we not be in a place where we don't expect an outcome right then? Because we know sometimes it takes 7 times to plant that seed before somebody moves into action. Sometimes that's a minimum.
Hmm. Well, I've been sharing with some people for 5-6 years and have them called me up and say, now I'm ready to coach, you know. So, you know, it's just when they're ready and when they can hear it, you know. And I'm very conscious to that too. You know, before I hired my coach, you know, or before I took on Deserve Level, would I have been willing to hear about it?
Right.
You know, there was a few months before I hired my coach where I went, I don't know about this whole thing, right? And that was me processing it. So people need to process, and we are all go through our own processing. And so I don't try to feel like I know what somebody's processes, I guess you would say. You know, they're going to have their own, and I always know that they're going to have the free will to decide. I can't go for what I believe would be, you know, a great life for them or something great for their life.
Awesome. Well said. Rabbi?
You know, there are many rabbis, there are many coaches, there are many nutritionists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I find that because we're not the only ones that do what we do in our field, people do business, so to speak, with people they know, they trust, they like. As I was saying before, not every shoe
Right.
So people make choices, and They may talk to other coaches or other nutritionists or other rabbis to make an informed decision to choose with whom they want to have the conversation or do the work or learn whatever it is they're trying to learn. I find in my work, I have a platform with my congregation when we speak about planting a seed. I don't tell people what to do, but I speak from my heart and I preach about those things that I think will resonate with, certainly they resonate with me, and hopefully by planting the seed and opening the door for people to think about how does it resonate to them in their lives and how do they want to continue living. Each day is a gift that we get. We only get 24 hours every day. We don't know what tomorrow will bring, let alone an hour from now will bring. So how do we live each and every moment the way it's meant to be lived, from a place of integrity, from a place of kindness and respect and love and
gratitude,
positive energy in the world, right?
Yeah.
How can we do that?
Well, and the gratitude is huge, right? I mean, you can manifest anything with gratitude, like literally anything.
Sure.
Secret. Don't tell them that. So, you know, Andrew and I just moved here to Grays Lake, and we have this lawn, and we have to mow it. I'm like, we don't have a lawnmower. So my girlfriend was saying, well, you know, when we got a really good lawnmower, because I was walking down the street and someone left one out on the sidewalk, or not, you know, for garbage pickup. And so we got rid of our old lawnmower, took somebody else's lawnmower that was not so good, or that was better than our not so good lawnmower. And I said, gosh, and she told me that like 3 days ago. I'm like, I want that to happen. I want to manifest a lawnmower on the side of the road that I can just go and take. You know, because someone else is garbage, right? Guess what we got yesterday? We went for a walk. Remember, Kristen, every time I'm going for a walk, we came home with a lawnmower.
I got a lawnmower, too, this week. I was like, I need a lawnmower. You know, I'm a lady in my home with my triplets, and like, I need a lawnmower. I don't have a lawnmower. And then my boyfriend had me over and he goes, I have a big surprise for you. And I'm like, what? He was given a lawnmower. So I got a lawnmower.
Right? And I know this sounds
like
there are people outside this circle right now. They're really, there are people who totally get this. Like my tribe gets this all day long. And then there are those who don't. So all I'm going to say to that part of the audience, try it out. What do you got to lose? Right? You got nothing to lose but some good positive thoughts. And they're really not going anywhere but back into you. So try it out because, I mean, I have a whole manifestation board. Yes, you know, things that I want. And you don't get it by saying, oh, I want, you know, a bouquet of flowers, and then they just show up. You just have to keep manifesting with gratitude, acceptance, love, the things that we're talking about. You keep putting out good in the world, and, there's that. And then also, and this is going to sound hard, and this is really what Kristen does. I don't do it. I don't teach it. But I do it as a practice, but Kristen can teach you how. It's about really like controlling your own thoughts, meaning creating positive self-talk, positive thoughts, and that positive self-talk and positive thoughts, that's the energy that you put out into the world.
Well, and I would just like to make an adjustment to that because it's not necessarily about even controlling your thoughts because you'll drive yourself crazy trying to control them.
Thank you. Because I was thinking I didn't like that word either. Yeah.
And it's about being conscious of them.
Thank you. Thank you.
Which ones to listen to and then to be able to discern, like, is this thought moving me forward toward what I want? Is this thought moving me away from what I want? and to be able to choose powerfully, you know, because, I mean, we're all going to, I mean, I haven't figured out how to control my thoughts yet,
but I have
figured out how to practice ones that move me forward.
And I'm so glad I said it that way so that you could give a distinction. Because it is about self-awareness. It is about self being conscious of the self, not self-conscious, but conscious of the self. I'm gonna,
I have clients that'll call me sometimes and be like, "She's coach, I still have those thoughts." I'm like, "I know, but you don't have to listen to them anymore."
So replace them. You have to have an idea about what you're going to replace it with when you have them. So
I'm
going to go to commercial, but before that, I just want to say, like, we're all judgment machines, right? We just are. We're judgment machines. We're never going to stop judging other people, things, places, blah, 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 blah. But you can catch yourself fast and switch it off, like, and switch it to something else. Switch it to embrace who they are, embrace where they are, who they are, and what they want to be, and embrace the fact that it doesn't have to be the same as you, right? All right, so we're going to quick go to commercial because we're 15 minutes late for the last one, but and then we don't have another one until 8:30. Hold on. So this is The Place of Peace.
The Place of Peace pop-up is a multimodal approach that helps your body feel balanced, centered, and rejuvenated in 20 minutes or less using sound frequency, BEMF technology, aromatherapy, salt therapy, and healing music. This aligns you with the heartbeat of the universe, heightens perception, and increases mental clarity to give you what you need to take on the day. We pop up at your office, your events, retreats, or you can come to our office.
So what's really cool, and I'm just going to do some technology things here real quick. We have to do the other radio type commercial. So let me just, let's see here. I'm trying to see if I can find, forgive me for the technology issues. Here we go.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456.
With a simple blood test and food plan, Susan Essentials will help your business, your family, and you eliminate toxins and create a step-by-step plan to nourish your mind, body, and spirit. Click here to learn more.
Okay, and then...
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul, whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Okay, we are back. And, all right, so where are we?
We were talking about judgment, and I think that that's not a great word. Many times people will come to me and say, Rabbi, I'm not that religious. And they're embarrassed about how Jewish they are. I always say, we're not here to talk about how observant you are. I don't feel I'm a good Jew, Rabbi. The reason they come to me is not to talk about their religion or how observant they are. They're coming to me because they want counseling or because they're getting married or their child is becoming bar mitzvah or they just had a baby and they want their baby to be named or it's in the hospital or it's a hospice situation. So I find that none of the work I'm really doing is to talk about how observant they are. It's just to listen to what would you like your ceremony to look like if we're talking about a baby naming or a bat mitzvah or a wedding or even the funeral. Families will say, we don't want a lot of Hebrew in the service. And I hope that's okay, Rabbi. I wish it's okay. So my work is to serve people and to really listen to what their needs are in the moment. And so much of what I do varies. I do a variety of work as a rabbi, but I find that people often are judging themselves and they think that I am going to judge them based on how religious or not they are. And I immediately put them at ease to say no. I'm not here to judge you about anything, but especially what they talk about, what they bring up is how Jewish or how religious they are.
Well, and you make a really good point. And I love that you are not judgmental. Like, I know that about you. I could have felt, and I chose not to be, that I would be judged by people because I was born Jewish, right? And I converted to Christianity. It's a thing to me, okay? I embrace and love and honor my Judaism. I'm still a Jew, right? Who follows Christ. And I love, like, I studied the Torah. I studied Israel. Israelis are amazing, by the way. I mean, just take a look about tenacious and courageous people. Like really, for anybody who's listening, just take a look at how many patents that they have on the new stuff that they've created. I mean, I'm just going to say that, okay? I think they had more in like 2015. They had they were just behind the United States on the number of new patents that had come out. They're amazing people. So, so going back to judgment. Why is it that you think, Rabbi, and I'm going to come to you, Kristen, on this too, because I know you can speak really well on this, but I would like Rabbi to really give us her insights. So, Rabbi Nancy, why are people feeling, do you think, like they have to live to a certain level for somebody else? And why are they automatically feeling so judged, do you think? And would you agree, so I've got three questions for you, and would you agree or disagree that we are more judgmental of ourselves than most people are judging us to begin with?
Like, we are our worst enemy in terms of judgment. Go ahead.
Wow, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, it is. Go for it.
I've been doing this work for 41 years. And I started in social work, and then most of my career I was a cantor, singing, working with rabbis and congregations. And then since 2012, when I went back to school to become a rabbi, I've been doing different work more so as a rabbi than in my social work and cantorial years. And I have found over the years and in my lifetime, speaking from what I know of the Jewish people and how things have changed a lot in terms of how when I was a child, all of us kids were going to religious school. Many went to Hebrew school. I did not go to Hebrew school. I didn't learn Hebrew until I was 17. That's another story for another time. But today I find that many parents choose not to send their children to religious school or Hebrew school. Things are changing in the world. And this is even before the pandemic. I find today children are involved in so many extracurricular activities. And it's expensive to belong to a synagogue, not my synagogue, but other synagogues. And for lots of different reasons. And I'm a Reform rabbi, so I'm speaking about the Reform Judaism that I know best to speak about. And how many families, I think, would define themselves, or the universe would define them, as secular Jews. They're not living necessarily an observant Jewish life. I was raised in a secular home in a non-Jewish community, and how I became a cantor and then a rabbi, a lot of people touch their head and wonder, how did that happen? But it was the music that drew me in and started that career for me. So I think that people today, as adults who now have children of their own, knowing how they were raised going to religious school and going to synagogue on a more regular basis, and now as adults with children of their own, they're not necessarily living that kind of life, and they're not having their children go for the formal religious education or Hebrew education. And therefore they, I think, judge themselves and think maybe a little less of themselves, or embarrassed because they're not as educated, or they're not choosing to have their children be educated in the way that they were for lots of reasons. And so there's the embarrassment, I think. And I think it's just normal for people to had this vision, oh, a rabbi is this pious person, highly educated, and they often put us rabbis, I think, on a pedestal. Not just rabbis, but clergy in general. And I think that I don't like when people put me on a pedestal. I say, you know, I'm a human being too. I appreciate, you know, it's one thing to respect clergy and to think that you would hope that your pastor or your minister or your rabbi or your cantor leads a pious life, or is somebody you can look to and trust and believe that that person leads a good life with integrity. But not all clergy do. But I think many times people put clergy on a pedestal, and therefore when they look at their own life, they think, and they're judging themselves, or they're judging me, thinking that I'm this holier-than-thou person. I'm not holier-than-thou, I don't think. I mean, I appreciate the respect, but I'm a human being, just like you are. I put on my clothes the same way you put on your clothes. And I often say to people, you know, I'm a sister, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm a daughter of deceased parents. But, you know, I am an aunt, and I'm a friend, and I'm a human being in many ways, just like you. We're equal. I don't appreciate being put on a pedestal, so to speak. But so I think people just judge. They judge others, and then they also judge themselves in relationship to others.
So I think that you're right. I think that a lot of people do put clergy on a pedestal. I think they put coaches on a pedestal. I think they put people on pedestals. I used to do it. Kristen, what about you? What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that I work with people on is what are their judgments? You know, are their judgments moving them forward or away from what they want? You know, and to be able to expand their awareness on that, because many people, their judgments are impacting, you know, their peace and their serenity and their ability to take actions as well, you know, so, and their ability, you know, like they might really, really want a loving relationship with someone in their life, but they're too busy judging them. You know, and they're too busy, you know, judging them in such a way that, you know, is impact, you know, that other person feels, you know. So I'm always, you know, coaching people to really expand their awareness and see, you know, what their judgments are. You know, I do a lot of journaling in the work that I do. Journaling, voice journaling, like however people have to get it out, even if it's, you know, it's funny, some people get it out best by drawing, but it's to really be able to figure out what your judgments are, because if they're keeping you from what you want in life and they're keeping you from your peace and they're keeping you from your serenity, it's a really great opportunity to change your mind, you know, and to practice changing your mind, you know. So I also love to look at it like instead of judging, I like to replace judging and practice replacing judging with discernment. You know, if I can discern something, you know, is this moving me forward? Is this moving me away? If I feel emotion get in my way because of a judgment I'm making, can I flip this to discernment? You know, can I look at the facts? Can I take a step back? You know, it's funny, you know, one of my really good friends, he's always like, take a step back, take 10 steps back and then look at it, you know, almost like you're observing it, you're like observing the situation so that it's not so intense within you, you know, it's not so personal to you. So I'm also looking at, see, I think judgment really has us take on, you know, taking things personally, for example. Well, if you could flip it to discernment, you don't have to take it so personally. You can consciously, you know, discern the situation versus judging it, and you don't have to take things personally. When you take things personally, a lot of times it fogs you over. You can't see what to do. You get triggered. You get angry. You get emotional. Versus if you're just discerning something, it's like, do I move forward or do I move away? Is this, do I go left? Do I go right? So
I love that. And, you know, when you say take a step back, it reminds me of, I often say to people, take a breath. So much in yoga, we talk about breathing, right? It's all about the mindfulness. So when I listen to people and they talk, and they never take a breath, pause for a moment, take a breath. Think about what you're saying or what you're hearing, what comes up for you. And we talk about this in music as well. Often somebody can play a beautiful piano piece, but it's the silence in between the notes. There's actually a quote, and it's not coming to me exactly what that quote is, but the beauty in the music often is the rest, the pause in between the notes. So we know when people speak and they can talk really loudly, but then when they get super soft, it's amazing how you get one's attention, not yelling and screaming, but often by being silent or being soft, powerful, very calm.
Yeah, I remember one of the ways that I practice, it's kind of funny, I coach people on this, and but they need to create their own. But one of the things, like if I start feeling triggered, like if I'm starting to feel like my throat clench up because of something somebody said, or I'm starting to feel like I'm getting the sweats or I'm getting angry, right? One of the things that I do to create that observer and to be able to discern is I picture the Energizer bunny going, ding, ding, ding. You know? So I can pivot, you know? So I practice what I call a mental pivot, right?
And what do? You picture the ever-ready bat bunny? And he's going like,
yeah, he's really annoying. And he goes, ding, 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 you know? And he's like, I'm like, you know, it wakes me up. And when something wakes me up, then I have the ability to use my conscious mind, right? So I always talk about expanding consciously and on purpose. We can always override whatever's going on automatically. So that's why I'm always coaching people to expand their consciousness. So that's one of the tools that I use myself.
Well, I'm going to bring on a caller. It's 847-220. I happen to know this caller. Hold on. So you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Andrew. I'm calling from Chicago area. I'm in Great Lake specifically, but one of the things that I heard, and I've enjoyed the conversation, Rabbi Nancy and Kristen, and one of the things that I've noticed that seems like a common thread here is the term active listening. And we had a speaker, Stephen Kohler, on this show maybe last month. And especially when you mentioned about people putting you on a pedestal because they feel like you have knowledge that they don't have and there's no way that they can get the insights that you have. And I know that both of you, all three of you, are great listeners, and that's the way that you can make your the people you speak with feel more comfortable and understand that it's maybe they have what they need inside them. They have the experiences that will help them draw the conclusions they need, and you're perhaps a guide. And certainly, Rabbi, being a teacher and helping people to feel comfortable in coming to you, can you talk more about active listening and what that means to you?
Absolutely. I took a course called Listening with Compassion. And that course, along with what I learned about active listening in my clinical pastoral education, amazing. To really listen, be fully present when someone is speaking. And it's listening, looking at, as I talked about before, the nonverbal cues, like the light coming into the room and where are they, what is their surrounding, what are they not saying, you know, how is their body language. And so it's a lot of the nonverbal as well as the tone in which someone is speaking. Is somebody shouting? Are they talking softly? What is behind the words that someone is saying? Sometimes people just kind of scratch the surface when they speak. But to understand what's behind it. So it's like an onion. You just keep peeling back the layers and actively listening to what's behind each or underneath each layer and picking up on the nonverbal language that's also being shared that is huge in the work I do.
So I read up on, you know, I often talk about tone. It's huge. It says ultimately the tone of your message is, and this is more about the written message, but it applies. It says the tone of a message is a reflection of the writer. The tone will drive whether or not your message is received. So there's the incentive for someone to be self-aware and look at their tone and listen to their own tone and listen to others. Because if your tone's off, guess what? You can talk all you want. No one's hearing you anyway. Kristen, you wanted to respond, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of active listening with what I do, you know, it's, you know, a lot of what I do is work over the phone, you know, so tone is, of course, very important. But the other thing, too, is to make sure that I'm responsible for my mind not wandering, you know, that I'm responsible for being present with people while they're speaking, like I'm truly listening. And one of, you know, that was actually something I worked quite a bit on. I mean, when I was in grade school, all of my report cards, I was reading them not too long ago as I was moving. I remember reading them like, she doesn't listen in class. She doesn't listen in class. She doesn't listen in class because I was a daydreamer. And I'd always be thinking about, you know, what's after school or, you know, what's going on the weekend or, and I wasn't truly present with people. I wasn't really listening. And one of the things that I really trained myself to do, particularly in coaching and, you know, in sales as well, was to be able to really listen to people. And I would, you know, come up with ways to bring myself back to the present moment, whether it be through my breath. I actually have these little fingers, like a little pinch on my thigh every now and again, just to go, hey, are you here? You here? Are you listening? You know, those are things that I do because the second I stop, you know, active listening, I can no longer coach anybody. I can't coach anybody. You know, I'm in a very big, you know, state of, I'm just going to call it a fogginess, right? And I can't be intentional in that place. So it's just really critical that I'm always listening. So I can't say that enough.
Well, and, or, Kristen, you mentioned that, like, in school, you were thinking about, you know, the weekend or what you're doing, what's for dinner or whatever, who your playmate's going to be when you, you know, play with dolls or whatever it is that you played with, right? So a lot of people listen to reply, which means they caught something and then they stopped listening because they're crafting their reply to what they heard a minute ago. Now, my workaround to that is note-taking.
Oh, absolutely. That's
right.
A great one.
Yeah. So listening, so that's how I make sure. And now, you still check out, right? You check out for the moment that you're writing that note down. You're going to miss parts. And you can ask a question. You can go back, well, okay, I just missed that. You're still an active listener. You're, you know, so don't, like, judge yourself, right? Because this is a skill that takes a long time to acquire, and it's never perfect because we don't achieve perfection in our own eyes, but in God's eyes, we are perfect, right? So, but then the other thing you talked about was pinching yourself, or the tambourine, right, like the button. So my doctor, Dr. Michelle Kukla, and there's lots of doctors that do this, our psychologist, Jen Stennett, they use EMDR, Edward Mary David Randi. And what it is it's a it's like two little things that you hold in your hand, and now they can do this over the phone. I don't know how. I haven't done it that way. But basically, and I'll just use my oil bottles as something to hold. But if you're holding this in your hand, and it gives you a little buzz, right? Like a zap doesn't hurt. It's like the vibration you might feel if you're using an electric razor or something like that. And it's setting what you want setting the vibration into your body, right? So, for instance, what I set in was joy. So, and I also set in courage, right? Courageous destiny. So on this finger, I have courage to stand in the face of fear. And in this hand, I have joy, which that reminds me of when I was scuba diving in Hawaii a couple decades ago. And I can bring up that feeling of joy in a moment.
or I can bring up the courage I need to see my truth. And so there's ways that people can support themselves, you know, like tons of them. So, Andrew, did you have another question? I'm sure you do, because you're so full of good information and good questions.
That's good to hear, and for sure, I think we all benefit from finding coaches, which all three of you are, in certain, whether you define that or not that way, and mentors, which all three of you are. But it's being able to have a person feel comfortable in approaching you. So you three also have skills, not only the knowledge base and the experience, but approachability. Because if a person does put you on a pedestal and they're afraid because they're going to be embarrassed by not knowing, feeling that they should come to you with a certain level of understanding. And you know, many people feel that way. They don't want to ask questions because they feel like it's going to be a stupid question. We've all heard from school, from workplace, there are no stupid questions. But it doesn't mean people don't feel that way. In many situations you have where if the person felt a little bit more at ease and comfortable, they benefit. But certainly all the other people listening also will benefit because someone else out there had the same question. And I'm sure you, not only with talking to people from all the wealth of information you have from your experience with clients and friends, you're able to pull that out. So let's suppose you have this conversation we're having right now, and a month from now, you pull from that when there's a client or a parishioner or someone in the temple who comes to you and you say, yeah, that, you know, that question came up on a call 3 weeks ago. It's not unique to you. It is important, but let me tell you some suggestions. So pulling from a wealth of knowledge, which you have, that's one of the great coaches have that. They can pull from so much from their background. And so I'm grateful to have listened to this this talk this morning. I don't have any more questions. Sorry, I was just pontificating a bit and thanking all three of you for being and sharing your wisdom on this call. Bye.
Thank you. So, you know, it's interesting. Rabbi Nancy, you brought up earlier in the show about creating a safe space for people to share. That is, and this is on, you know, at the end of their life, right? Or even when they're going to get married, they still have to have a safe space to share. I read a book twice a year. It's called Crucial Conversations. I either have the hard copy or I listen to it in the car or, you know, the e-reader. And Crucial Conversations talks about exactly what we're all talking about, which is psychological safety. So when people feel that they're in a safe place, they're going to speak freely, which is why, Rabbi Nancy, people just tell you everything. You know, even people who don't go, I normally don't share like that. Well, why don't they normally? Because they don't have a safe place. And you provide that safe place. Same with you, Kristen. Also, people are like vomiting over us, right? And it's okay. But they consider it vomiting over us because they don't typically share. But it's actually just we're providing this safe place for people to be who they are and release what it is that they need to say and be heard and use their voice. And then, Kristen, like you were saying, find ways to adjust how they speak so they can be heard and achieve what they're looking to achieve. It's about operating from their agenda.
I also think one thing that I'd like to add, if it's okay,
of course,
is the context when we're speaking with people is so critical in our minds. You know, people share with me all the time, but one of the, you know, and, you know, I am the person at the airport that somebody will sit down to and, you know, hear all about their kids and their lives, and I love it, you know, and I think that that's my first context. What an honor that they're entrusting me to share with me, you know, and I think that just coming from that space allows me to, you know, I mean, to me, it's like a divine gift that I have.
Yes,
you know, that
yes,
that people are coming to me, and what an honor. And I thank them a lot of times for sharing with me. I'm like, I just want to thank you for entrusting me with this. You know, it's important to me that you feel comfortable that you were able to share that. You know, so to me, it's always about context. And I think that when you're naturally, you know, I can't even say I was naturally compassionate, but I am now. You know, I created it because I love that. You know, I did start to recognize that was a gift I had, that I was approachable to people. You know, and even when I go out there and I give my speeches about sales and what have you, that's one of the things that I address with people is, please approach me. I invite them to approach me, you know, so.
Well, we have two callers with questions. So, yeah, this is kind of exciting. So I'm going to take 312-849, and then what I want you to do is state your name, where you're calling from, and give us your question. Hold on. So,
yes, well, good morning to everyone. This is Naima from Chicago. I know you got to take one last break. I got a question I'm asking out of curiosity, but I'll let you go to the break first, and I'll come back and ask Rabbi Nancy a question that I've been pondering for a while. We talked about a while, but I'll let you go to the break, and then I'll come back and ask the question.
Sure, sure. So we'll do a quick commercial here.
With a Place of Peace pop-up from Susan Essentials, you are able to increase productivity, mental acuity, leaving you with higher energy and peace in just 20 minutes. We pop up at our office or yours.
Do you or your organization need space for an event? Call the Quarry Event Center at 2423 East 75th Street in Chicago. For your parties, banquets, award ceremonies, repasses, concerts, and business seminars. Available 7 days a week. Now under new management. Call us at the Quarry at 773-663-2557. That's 773-663-2557.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan of Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses, and we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being, and we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
We're back. let me go back. I just need a second to bring Naima back on and try to exit this. Naima, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so go ahead with your question.
And Naeem is our executive producer, by the way. So.
And I'm really enjoying this show. It's been so very informative. And I know a lot of times religious decrees that have happened throughout history might be connected to perhaps a public health issue that was going on at the time. Just like, you know, 200 years from now, when people are greeting each other with an elbow bump, nobody's going to remember that it was connected to this pandemic and people were afraid of germs and all of that. But it'll just become a custom, and people will have perhaps lost the history behind it. So, you know, a couple of days ago on Viata's show, we had an extensive conversation about circumcision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are those who say, well, this shouldn't be done. It's traumatizing to the male children and so forth. And then there are those who are saying, well, there's some health benefits. But knowing that there's nothing in the human body that we don't need, you know, with the tonsils, appendix, or whatever, that some things get removed, but there really is a need for them, you know, in its creation. I wanted to know if Rabbi Nancy knew the history behind circumcision. And was there some kind of public health issue that was connected to the reason why that was advised, and then, of course, now is an ongoing practice?
I am not an expert on circumcision, but I can certainly tell you that this is a way of having the baby boy be brought into the covenant, the breach, the covenant between God and Israel. And so this is a tradition that is still practiced today. In the Reform movement, which is the most liberal branch of Judaism, I am finding that not as many, it's not an assumption that all Jewish boys are being circumcised. And today, many couples are choosing their baby boys to be circumcised in the hospital rather than the moil, which is the trained person to do the circumcision. And so therefore I'm called on, oh, well, our baby boy's going to be, or was circumcised in the hospital, but we still want a naming ceremony where the baby boy will receive his Hebrew name. We do similar ceremonies without a circumcision, without any kind of cut, for baby girls. We do a naming ceremony. But a lot of the traditions back, you know, thousands of years ago and how this started, I mean, you can read about it in the Old Testament, right? How it set apart the Jews from the non-Jews. Yeah. And when this happens, you know, typically you do this for a baby boy on the eighth day after the baby's been born, not an adult male. I mean, just like cringing, thinking how painful. We know it would be painful for any boy of any age, but a baby, you know, who's 8 days old isn't going to remember as he grows up what that experience was like when he was 8 years old. So I don't know if that gives you enough an answer to your question. I hope that it does.
Does it answer I guess
that's the answer that exists. You know, because I'm hearing both sides, and like I said, I know some things may have been connected to something that was happening at the time historically, maybe some type of germs or genital issues that was helping to alleviate. But again, it just was. Okay, this is just part of the covenant, the religious decree, the practice that set Jews aside from non-Jews, and it was necessary to do that at the time for whatever historical reasons. Maybe that's what it is. So
that's what I heard, Naeema. I heard both those things, like for decades. One was to make the distinction in war who was a Jew and who was not a Jew, especially, you know, who was the Greeks. And then the other thing I had learned was
there was a cleansing thing where there was disease because disease was getting, you know, whatever bacteria, I don't know exactly, but was in the fold of the penis. And so as a result, that was what I understood from, because I asked these questions when my nephews were circumcised 20 plus years ago.
That was, Well, you know, I guess it's a personal choice each family can make. I mean, of course, we know we're not condemned by God either way. It's just, you know, your own decision how you feel. So, okay. Well, thanks for the answer.
Well, interesting. I think it's a really good question because, you know, I'm going to take this into health and out of religion for a minute. And first of all, I'm not an expert on circumcision, but I feel like I have a really good, check mark when it comes to whole body health, right? And why don't we need our whole body, right? And we can step away from circumcision, and you can go into tonsils, right?
Yeah.
You go into any other body part that they think that they need to remove, because that's what they do for a living. They remove body parts, you know, whatever, if you're a surgeon, or they modify body parts. And I'm all about healing those body parts. And I'm going to tell you, I have a brother, my brother David out of Texas. He's a gift. And in 2014, I think it was, I was going to have surgery on my rotator cuffs, both of them, because I had two torn rotator cuffs.
Ooh.
And he said, Jody, I don't know. I just don't think you should do it. Now, he's had surgery on stuff, right? So it's not like he's anti-surgery. But guys, I've never had surgery ever on my rotator cuffs. And I can weightlift. I have videos on my YouTube channel showing that I'm weightlifting. I can lift things above my head, heavy, you know, and yet I technically have two torn rotator cuffs. What did that flip and tell you about the body?
It can heal itself.
Yeah, just ponder that for a while. And I want to tell you something else around that same exact story. My girlfriend, Linda Stevens, I always say this, pardon my French. She told me also to not have surgery. And she said, well, you should use this, there's different ways to heal it. And I literally was sitting in her passenger seat of her car, and I told her she was that shit crazy. I'm like, you're crazy. And yet I never had surgery. I used the modalities, and I healed my shoulder. So, I used frankincense essential oil. It does cellular repair. I used lavender for the pain. I used energy-based healing. So at that time, chiropractic. I saw my chiropractors, Dr. Clinton and Dr. Katie Slay in Arlington Heights. I also used acupuncture. And for the first time in 20 years, I was able to use a hair dryer. Right?
Wow.
I couldn't lift the hair dryer up high enough to blow dry my hair. So however my hair decided to dry, that's how it was drying that day. Like I got used to whatever it took because I couldn't function. My body wouldn't function. Mm. So if you are looking for solutions, I may not be your solution, but I can certainly tell you where to go.
I surgeons, that's what they do. You know, they know how to remove things surgically, but then once you take something out, it can't heal because it's gone. So I always think energy healing is best. I think we just haven't known enough, and I hope that our medical professions will begin to adopt those natural ways of helping the body heal itself the way it is designed to do. But, you know, I'm always curious about things that we do out of tradition
because so many traditions are based on situations that no longer exist. So, you know, do we continue the tradition because it's the religion, or do we not do the tradition, but then those who choose not to, are they deemed less spiritual?
Yeah, and I don't know that, Nancy, Rabbi Nancy, do you have an answer for that, or not so much?
But if we're talking back about circumcision, the practice that continues today, you know, going back to Abraham and welcoming the Jewish boy as part of the covenant, part of the people of Israel, certainly in the more traditional, more observant communities, the Orthodox or the conservative movements of Judaism, I think, you know, that is a requirement. In the Reform, more liberal branch of Judaism, in the Reform community, I don't know that carrying on that tradition has the same kind of meaning as it does for others. And again, that comes back to what we started talking about at the beginning of the show, is coming from a place of honoring people whose views are different than ours. In Reform Judaism, it's based on choosing those traditions that have making an informed decision as to which practices, which traditions do we find meaningful that will enrich our life and bring meaning to our life. And so I think that's why I'm a Reformed Jew, rather than being told this is what you must do. I was often one of those students, but why? Like, you know, don't just tell me this is the answer. I want to understand, well, why is that the answer? Or how did you get to that answer? It's not like math, 2 + 2 = 4. It is, right? So when you think about how we as parents, we say to our children, you know, this is what you need to do. And the child will say, why? Because I said so, right? There is a movie, Because I Said So. It's a great movie. So is there meaning? I think about when we study Torah and how we learn about the sacrifices, you know, the animal sacrifice. We don't do this today. Like, there's so many things that we read about, and I teach Torah several times a year, a six-week course, to people in my congregation and others who are not part of the anyone's welcome to join the course. We're actually starting our spring course in a couple weeks on the 18th. And we try to find some relevance to the Torah that was written thousands of years ago, things that happened thousands of years ago, like Abraham, who was asked by God. God told Abraham, this is what you need to do. You need to circumcise yourself. Why are some of these traditions still being practiced today, and by whom? And in the Reform movement, we choose those practices and traditions that are meaningful to us.
Well, we actually have another caller. I'm just going to see if we can take their question real quick. So 407-701. Let me just do that real quick. So we have about 30 seconds. 407-701. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Beata, your Friday host of Health and Wellbeing.
Hi,
and I chimed in so late, but I just wanted to add a little bit to what Naima said and the rabbi was saying. I walked with the Hebrew Israelite community for many years, and we were in the Torah, and we were practicing the Feast of Tabernacles and all that. And I think the summary around circumcision is this. Number one, it does prevent a lot of infections in men's penises because they don't know how to take care of an uncircumcised penis. That was my research that I found out from healthcare professionals who treated many men who had infections because they weren't circumcised. And number two, when you are really following scriptures and the Torah, you want to please your creator. You want to please God. And that was the second motivation for circumcision, is that a relationship with the scriptures and the Torah said, please be pleasing to God, be obedient. And that life brought peace. So I think with knowing that it can prevent infections and knowing that on some level it's pleasing to your creator who made these penises and vaginas, that it brings peace to a person. So I just thought I'd add that for my own personal journey. Those two were the reasons that I decided to circumcise my own son, because I was in a very serious relationship with the scriptures and the Torah and wanted to be obedient and prevent infections. And that's been proven that it does do that. Circumcision does prevent infections in men and boys.
Well, it absolutely Thank you. Does. Yeah, it absolutely does.
Thank you. Beautiful show. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. And so it is 9 o'clock, so we are going to end the show. Just do our little thank you ending. Rabbi Nancy, Kristen, you both are bright lights, and I'm so grateful that you took the time to be here and share your wisdom with the world. You both do it so gracefully and with compassion and love and, like we said earlier, in a safe space. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. It was really an honor to be on the show.
It really was.
An honor to have you guys.
Be safe. Be well.
You too.
Yes.
I'm going to run the commercial, which is the ending scene, have, you know, enjoy the rest of the day, and then I know that we'll circle back later. So,
yeah.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe, India, Zanyabat, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsahamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Dziękuję, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Medasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Jerez, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.